Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
Welcome to another episode of Reconstruction, the weekly podcast from the Construction Index. It's Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2020, and I'm David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine. And joining me as usual today is our online editor, Phil Bishop, the man with his finger on the quickening pulse of events in the construction sector. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm sticking out, as my father-in-law used to say.
Okay, fine. I don't suppose there will be any prizes for guessing what our main topic of conversation will be today. Well, do you want to have a stab at it?
It's still the rumbling, continuing saga of the lockdown of coronavirus and COVID-19. And there have been quite a few interesting developments this week in the news that we've been reporting on, or in the past 7 days or so. First one, you may have spotted, which actually back end of last week, the Construction Leadership Council published a revised version of the site operating procedures, which set out how to safely continue working through the pandemic.
Right.
And within hours of publishing these, putting out online that the version 2 is now available, use this, folks, it said, oh, our mistake. No, go back to version 1. We're taking version 2 down. They attribute it to feedback. It's not clear who delivered this feedback and in quite what terms. But essentially, the story was that version 1 had said on the subject of social distancing, quote, there will be situations where it is not possible or safe for workers to distance themselves from each other by 2 metres. In other words, it says, version 1 said, observe the social distancing, but we acknowledge that it's not always possible. That had led to a lot of confusion in the industry. So in an attempt to clarify it, version 2 had added the simple phrase after that, in these situations, i.e. in situations where it's not possible to be 2 metres apart, in these situations, work should not be carried out.
Mm.
So in an attempt to add clarity, them saying, look, if you can't stay 2 metres apart, don't do the job. Don't have to shut the site, just don't do that specific task. And if you consistently can't do tasks on the site, staying 2 metres apart,
go home.
Shut the site. Exactly that.
Yeah.
For the time being.
Yeah.
Now that appeared, or was certainly an attempt to add clarity. And lo and behold, the fact then said, oh no, we can't do that. Scrub that, as you were, folks, back to version 1. Remove clarity.
Mm.
And the Construction Leadership Council and a task force of other trade association leaders or trade association leaders are in daily discussions with ministers, and they've been begging ministers and government to try and get some greater clarity for the construction industry. So all this business is about why are you working? Why are you not working? Who should be on site? Who shouldn't be on site? To somehow get some clarity there. Resulted in yesterday or today, the business department is out on their bit of the website, new rules for all workplaces, but there's specifically a section on construction, social distancing in the workplace.
Yeah.
Now, this very much seems to me to be even softer on social distancing than version 1 of the site operating procedures. The latest instructions from government for the construction industry are, go to work. If work can continue in accordance with the social distancing guidelines, wherever possible.
Mm.
And in a short section, it uses the term wherever possible, then says, advise staff to keep 2 metres apart as much as possible. And as much as possible, keep groups of workers working together in teams that are as small as possible. In other words, if two people are in close proximity, keep those two together on their own in close proximity and don't mix and match them up with other small groups of people in close proximity.
Exactly, yeah.
In other words, it's saying we basically acknowledge that social distancing on a construction site ain't possible and much more than that.
And in fact, sorry, I was going to say that not only do they acknowledge that it's not really possible on a lot of sites. But they've also said, I think today or was it yesterday, that actually washing your hands is more important than keeping 2 meters apart from other people. It does suggest that you wash your hands at every conceivable opportunity.
Exactly that. I mean, we remember the headline on our website today that essentially was saying that social distancing is being pushed down the order, and the old original from a month ago, being told to wash our hands when we first got introduced to the concept of singing happy birthday while washing our hands. This is straight back to the front, left and centre of advice to the construction industry. Yeah. And including getting in and out of enclosed machinery, a digger cab or a crane cab, spray and soap everywhere, getting in, getting out.
And there was quite a lot of concern, wasn't there, from the Unite Union about the exposure of workers to possible infection, and they were particularly critical of the fact that some contractors were not observing or could not observe the social distancing. I think they homed in particularly on road maintenance crews, and presumably, you know, when you're working by the side of a road, especially if it's a live site, keeping 2 meters away might mean standing in the middle of a live carriageway. So I suppose it's particularly difficult to do it on a job like that.
And also there's a lot of sitting in vans involved with highway maintenance jobs. And you don't want...
they are working, though, of course.
Yeah, I don't mean sitting still in vans. I mean, you know, getting from point to point.
Yes.
We don't want people walking around the hard shoulders of motorways for miles to get to the next point of work.
No.
So it is an issue. And there does seem to be some slight conflicting tales on what's going on. Highways England insists that they're doing all they can and they're trying their hardest and they're taking it seriously. Other people have been in touch with us saying, well, not on my site. You know, we're
exactly.
Social distancing's out the window.
But then even washing your hands regularly and frequently, in fact, is going to be extremely difficult on a lot of construction sites. I mean, there just aren't the facilities. I mean, I think I can quote directly from the guidance. It says, if you decide to work, that work should go ahead, you should advise staff to wash their hands frequently using soap and water for 20 seconds, and especially after blowing their nose, sneezing or coughing, on arrival at work, before and after eating, after using public transport and when they arrive home. I mean, if you're out on site in the middle of nowhere and you sneeze, if you've got to go all the way back to the site hut in order to wash your hands,
the advice is everyone on site should have a tube or tub or whatever they're called, a container of hand sanitizer in their pocket.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can find it. Have you seen hand sanitizer on the supermarket or chemist shelves for the past month?
Haven't been looking for it. I've been going down the washing route myself, but no, I understand that it's in short supply. But I think there was also talk of temporary sort of washing stands being erected on sites at various intervals, so that maybe there's just a sort of a bowser with some water and a tap and a bar of soap or something like that.
And I suspect on the larger sites, these ones that shut down for 2 or 3 days that we talked about last week, the week before, and have reopened again after risk assessment, I suspect a lot of those sites have actually implemented exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Other sites, like litter picking on the motorways, you can't do that. I mean, the Unite Union say, well, how important is litter picking over people's health? Why is that? You know, why is that going ahead in the current conditions? Highways England say, well, it's important. It's for hygiene. It's important for keeping the gullies clear and for all sorts of other reasons. So they don't regard it as secondary.
No,
but I do sense, and again, we've talked about this before, the polarisation of the shut the sites versus let's get back to work, let's keep working, we need to keep the economy moving, seems to be becoming more polarised. And I think this latest advice from government downplaying social distancing, or at least qualifying it with wherever possible, as much as possible. I mean, it's still important. They're not saying it's not important. They're just saying it's not the be-all and end-all. Whereas many people were working under the impression, or more than the impression, their own personal belief that if they couldn't observe Public Health England guidelines on site in the workplace, they shouldn't be in the workplace unless what they were doing was really proper critical to the coronavirus effort. And that's what Scotland have come down and said. Scotland have basically said, unless your construction work is directly crucial to combating the pandemic, unless you're actually front and centre of doing something for the pandemic. Stop work, site closes. They've taken a pretty strong line on this.
I think it depends largely on whether or not you think the actual infection, I mean the physical infection with the virus, is a greater risk than the harm it's doing to the economy and to your business itself.
You've been talking to that Donald Trump, haven't you?
No, well, I haven't. I haven't even been listening to what he's been saying. I've heard whispers.
He used to be saying that we can't let the cure be worse than the disease, or how it was phrased.
Well, I think most people would agree with that. But I mean, Donald Trump is a law unto himself, so I don't think we need to attach too much importance to his opinions here.
But I think that what we need to keep a handle on the terms of the national strategy, rightly or wrongly, it's all about. And not just ours, I think it's the case in many countries. We talk about beating it. As far as I can tell, there's no cure for the common cold, there's no cure for this. It's all about keeping the curve flat that it becomes a long, slow thing and the NHS can manage. This is about, stay home, save lives, protect the NHS. That last point, protect the NHS, is what it's all about. And we've mentioned before that whole different thing about construction sites are amongst the most dangerous workplaces. Accidents do happen, even on the best of them. That's hardly protecting the NHS. But there is, while it's too soon to talk really about exit strategies and end games and coming out of this, because it's going on for so long, and it looks like it's going to go on for so long, there has become a sense that we can't just shut up shop. We can't just shut down construction.
No, indeed.
We could do it for a fortnight. If we thought we could just shut up shop for a fortnight, go down to our nuclear bunkers, hide for 2 weeks, come back and carry on, no one would notice. We could do that.
If it's going to be enough momentum to keep it going.
If it's going to be a 6-month thing, there won't be a construction industry if we don't preserve it.
And we'd have to reinvent it, I think.
And so we're now at this macro micro on a personal level. Yeah, I think absolutely, we are. We are putting infantry, foot soldiers into the trenches. The battle is not just for against the coronavirus. It is to save the economy.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, you have reported, I think only within the last couple of days, the latest sort of economic analysis about the construction industry and the effect it's had. And it really has dealt a blow, hasn't it? Construction industry activity in March 2020 fell to its lowest level for nearly 11 years. I mean, we really are looking at the same sort of circumstances, or similar circumstances, to the global recession, aren't we?
Well, you're talking about the monthly survey of purchasing managers in the construction industry.
Yes.
And I've said before, I'm slightly cynical about the accuracy of these surveys, because I know a lot of people fill in their forms or answer their questions as quickly as they can, and it's not particularly scientific. It's a bit of a finger in the wind. However, it's consistent. It's they use the same approach every month, and so any monthly changes, it's fair to read things into them. And what they found for when they asked people towards the back end of March what's going on, basically people said, not much, Gov. It's slowing down. They have this... Yeah. They give it a score, and 50 is a score, an index, which means no growth, no shrinkage of activity.
Yeah.
And it normally, on a good days, will bobble around the high 50s or something when all's going well, and occasional spikes above that. It's occasional bad months and bad times, it'll bobble around the mid-40s or something. It went below 40 in March, 39.3. which is pretty bloody low.
Yeah.
It was in the depth of the 2008-09 global recession, it dropped below 30. But that March reading, it wasn't until the evening of 23rd of March, remember, that Boris Johnson said, stay at home, folks, lockdown begins. Before that, it was best if you don't go to the pub unless you really, really do need a pint. It didn't stop too many people. So we've got 3 weeks of the month where, broadly speaking, normal-ish life was going on. Mm. And so if that month saw a drop down to a score of 39, it is fairly safe to assume that April, which will be a complete month of lockdown, it now seems absolutely certain. Yeah. The one in Italy I read came up as 15 last month.
Really?
Which basically means the lights are out and no one's home. And whether we get that, Hey, I don't know, but it'd be interesting to keep an eye at that. That'll be these come out on the second working day of the month. They now came out on the sixth of the month, or the Monday nearest to it, or something like that. So they're a few days later than they used to be, these surveys now.
But yes,
it's worth keeping an eye out for that one.
And well, there's one sector of the construction industry which seems to be fairly active at the moment, and that's in the healthcare sector. Do you remember about this time last month we were marvelling at the achievements of Chinese contractors? There were those wonderful aerial photographs of
a field of diggers.
Herds.
Yes.
Field of diggers. Actually remarkable. And we were wondering, how on earth do they do that? And of course, now we've got a much better idea, because we're having to do something very similar ourselves. And this new, they call them Nightingale hospitals, don't they? I don't know quite why. There is a hospital in London called the Nightingale Hospital, but it's a private one and has nothing to do with these. But the XL Exhibition Centre in East London has been turned into a 4,000-bed coronavirus hospital. And I'm not sure how long it took them to do it, but it was a matter of days, wasn't it? It was very, very quick.
I think it's about nine or ten days. But I think we were a bit smarter than the Chinese. Rather than finding a greenfield site and corralling dozens and dozens of bulldozers, we took an empty exhibition hall whose underneath the floor is absolutely littered with wires and cables. Because if you can imagine, when they have a big trade fair, every little stand has its own power source or power
services.
Supply.
So yes.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
So it was halfway there, or maybe not halfway, but there was infrastructure already in place in the XL and some of these other ones that are cropping up. But it was still a remarkable job of logistics. I know the army
Absolutely.
Were heavily involved, but I don't know to what extent we civilians can claim credit and what extent it's purely the army.
No, I wondered about that. But whenever there's an emergency which requires a lot of civil engineering or construction, you get the Royal Engineers or some, you know, the Gurkha Rifles, I think, were involved on this. I don't know what they do. I don't know what they actually do, because I think on the XL Centre there were 160 contractors involved and 200 soldiers. I'm assuming that the contractors were individuals and not subcontract businesses, but presumably they were the ones who did the work, and I imagine that maybe the armed forces just provided some muscle power for them.
I think it's more than that. I mean, these guys have got the expertise. I mean, they go into, you know, whether it's Kandahar or whatever, they go into these places and they set up.
Oh, they make field hospitals, of course. Maybe I've maligned them.
They do have the expertise. And the Royal Engineers have expertise at building bridges and all sorts of things in rapid time. And the other thing, of course, that the army are brilliant at, on the whole, is following orders, which, it's not so worried about questioning it and should we spend a while thinking about this and thinking if we can do it better. The military way is to get on and do it, isn't it?
But I think, as you alluded to just a couple of minutes ago, the fact that, you know, we didn't try and build from scratch on a greenfield site, a lot of the actual structures that the Chinese used were basically boxes. They were modular structures which they just shipped in. I don't think that was the difficult bit necessarily. I think with any building project, particularly a hospital, which is very dependent on highly specialised services, it is the M&E that really is the challenge, because everything has to work, of course. It's not just electricity and water and light and heat and stuff like that. You've also got gases and a lot of specialist drainage and all that sort of stuff. And actually plumbing all that stuff in, I should think, is extremely complicated and very difficult, especially on such a large scale and in such a short time scale.
But I suspect even harder than that is, because of the short time scale, you saw the pictures of these halls, you know, thousands of square metres, open space, there'll be cables, wires everywhere, people working all over on top of each other. So what I'm more fascinated is the sheer logistics, the man management, the time and motion, you know, who moves where and when. That's the real clever stuff, I would imagine.
And of course that comes back to our earlier discussion about social distancing. I wonder how they're managing that on such a busy site. And I ought to mention one or two of the people who are involved here. I noticed that BAM Construct is one of the contractors which is heavily involved. Were they involved at the XL Centre? I can't remember.
I don't think they were. No, I think the XL Centre was a company called CFES, who do a lot of work.
Yeah, that's an M&E specialist.
They do a lot of work in the health sector. You mentioned Bamo at Harrogate, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
but the other ones, though, the big ones are Birmingham, Manchester, Cardiff, Glasgow, Belfast, Bristol, and Harrogate. Well, they're building all of these at the moment, and Swansea, Kia. Working in Swansea, but also all sorts of people are involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest one is still the Nightingale Hospital in London, but Birmingham's 2,000 beds, Cardiff is 2,000 beds, Bristol's 1,000 beds. So, I mean, these are all fairly big. And as you say, they're using exhibition halls and sports stadia. I think Cardiff, it's the Millennium Stadium they're using, isn't it? So these are all sort of existing facilities which aren't going to be used for anything else in
at the moment. So, no, nothing else is going on.
I mean, so quite remarkable.
We've had a quote from Regional Managing Director of Vinci Construction, who are working. They've got a joint venture with Robert McAlpine, Integrated Health Projects, who do, as their name suggests, a lot of hospital jobs. And the Vinci McAlpine joint venture is converting Manchester Central, the Central Hall Convention Centre there. He was saying, John Roberts, this chap's name, it's been amazing to see how everyone has collaborated in just a matter of days to turn this hospital around. Everyone's attitude has been remarkable, and I couldn't be prouder. We are all focused on getting these beds ready to help save lives. So any suggestion I made that the army were getting on with things and the civilian construction industry was a little bit slower, the stores should be rescinded straight away, and I apologise for suggesting in any way that the construction industry was not doing anything but a fantastic job on these hospitals.
I agree, and I have to say, maybe I'm being a bit cynical here, but it does puzzle me how jobs like these, which are so intensive when it comes to the M&E installations, how they can be started and completed so quickly, when on most construction jobs, it's the M&E that holds things up in the end. You know, Crossrail is an excellent example of this. All the really complicated tunnelling and civil engineering work went like an absolute dream. It's only when they started putting in the signalling and stuff like that everything began to dissolve into a mess.
Well, my understanding on Crossrail, it wasn't putting in the M&E that was a problem. It was when they switched it on and the computers and that sort of stuff. So they found out that bits didn't talk to each other like they're supposed to, and things all need to be coordinated and tied in. I hope it doesn't happen at these field hospitals, that the M&E works first time, and I have no reason to suppose that it won't work first time. Again, I think operating an entire transport network is different from getting power.
That's true.
To a bedside.
And maybe that's where the armed forces do contribute, because perhaps they have some sort of template for a field hospital. Maybe they know, you know, how to install these things very quickly and on a temporary basis, and presumably that's the expertise that perhaps isn't quite so much to the fore in the civilian sector. They don't have to put a hospital together so quickly, whereas perhaps the army does.
Well, I predict we're going to see some television coverage in the coming days of the mobilisation of these field hospitals. They have had the camera crews in there, and we're going to start seeing some of the footage that we haven't seen yet, and that will be fascinating to watch. So I'd say look out for that. On the subject of temporary field hospitals, our colleague Lisa Russell, international editor, she posted an interesting piece this week. It's about an international alliance seeking to convert standard shipping containers, into plug-in pods, which be used to add capacity or expand intensive care units. They call them Cura pods, connected units for respiratory ailments. First unit's currently being built in Milan.
Oh, that's right. I think Jacobs was involved.
That's
in that,
it.
Wasn't it?
Yep. Connected units for respiratory ailments. I don't know whether it's just an idea, a desk study, or whether it's actually going to happen. But this prompted a reader, a chap called Chris Williamson, an architect from Weston Williamson, to get in touch with an idea that he's been working on, I think, before, in the past, on utilising underused container ships. And he's looking to bring this idea back to life, to have COVID-19 hospital ships with these containers piled high, all slightly modified, just put in a few access plates and lifts between floors. But if it gets really, really bad, you can have floating field hospitals set up in short order, which is an interesting idea.
Is it an idea that predated the COVID-19 outbreak? I mean, is it something he was working on already?
The suggestion is that he'd previously been working on other ways of using underutilized container ships. I don't know whether it's specifically a hospital, but I've opened up a conversation with him, so we'll hope to hear more from him about this idea.
Yeah, very interesting. And there was another interesting story I saw, which I think again was posted by Lisa, which was how a Scottish housing association is using augmented reality to help its tenants with their building maintenance and minor repairs. It's the Kingdom Housing Association. They're using augmented reality, as I say, to help carry out minor repairs. And what it basically is it's a sort of an app on your mobile phone or tablet. And it provides this, if you know what augmented reality is, and I've only got a very feeble grasp of what it is, never having actually seen it myself, it's rather like FaceTiming somebody, but you can almost reach out and show somebody what to do at the other end of the phone. It allows basically trade operatives to be virtually present in a tenant's home, so they can see the issue in real time. They can use the video technology on their mobile device, and then they can offer support and advice by having their hand superimposed on the scene in the tenant's home. Well, I think that's pretty clever. Kingdom Housing Association, I think, were already talking about this before the current virus outbreak, and of course it's really come into its own since then. And they are, you know, they say many simple repairs and problems can be fixed by the tenant themselves. You know, just take a screwdriver and tighten that one. Or if, for example, your washing machine isn't working, why isn't my washing machine, you know, filling up? And they can say, well, pull it out from the back of the wall, point your camera in there, and then I'll show you which tap to turn and which hose to attach and this kind of thing. So it's really quite good. I mean, it'd be good in any circumstances, I imagine, but when you can't actually be there with somebody, it must be even more value.
If I was a plumber or a washing machine repairman, I would have got quite nervous reading this story, because there are many, many, many jobs which I don't have the confidence to do myself about the house. Some I do, but there's some I would call someone in, get someone in. But if I could call on this, I think I'd be pretty confident with an expert many miles away guiding me through virtual reality how to make the fix. I'd give it a go.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point, actually. And there might be some very nervous plumbers out there as a result of this. I mean, I like to think that I can handle most basic home maintenance tasks. But one thing I won't mess around with, well, there are two things. One is gas, because you can't see it.
You're not allowed to.
I'm not allowed to. But electricity, you also can't see it. And I won't get involved with that. But if I had a bloke at the other end of the phone who I could hold my phone up to the fuse box, or what it happens to be, and he can actually virtually point to a wire and say, stick that in that hole there, or whatever it is, then I'd feel a lot more comfortable doing it.
That particular example, I mean, yes, I would do it with plumbing, I'd do it with electricity, but I'd want him to stick his screwdriver in there and feel the shock before I did.
Well, I don't think that augmented reality actually extends to that sort of function just at the moment, but you never know, it might happen.
It does rather ruin all future James Bond films when he's got to decide which wire to cut on the bomb and he's got 10 seconds to make an educated guess. Well, now he'll just be able to point to his phone and Q will be able to tell him which wire to cut. All jeopardy is lost.
Well, we were saying, I think, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, that when things do settle down again after this pandemic, and we start to get back to something approximating to reality, that actually things won't go back to the way they were and things will change. And I think maybe this is just an example, and it may or may not actually come to pass, but developments like this, which have been, you know, they talk about necessity being the mother of invention, ideas will come to the fore which perhaps have been either languishing, unused, or without any apparent usage before now, and all of a sudden they'll come into their own and we'll think, well, how on earth did we cope with this before? How on earth did we cope without this before? You know, now we can do this, let's do it all the time. So I think that when life gets back to normal again, perhaps we'll find that we don't have to do things quite the way we did them before. And, you know, that might just be simply that more people will be working from home because it's found by both them and their employer that it actually works more efficiently that way. And maybe it'll be things like this. It'll be technology, which has really proven itself under exceptional circumstances and can be enlisted into everyday use in normal circumstances.
I agree with that. I think there'll be a lot of new ways of working and new tools that we've had to learn how to work will become normal in the future. And as they always say,
absolutely,
what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
So they say. Finally, I mean, there's one piece of technology. I'm not being paid to advertise it, but the technology that we use when we do this podcast is Zoom, because it's a really efficient way of connecting us remotely with our producer, Ben. And, of course, we thought we were pioneers using Zoom, but everybody is using it now. And if I were a Zoom shareholder, I'd probably be delighted.
Well, David, I think that's just about it for this week. Thank you very much to all our listeners once again for tuning in, downloading on whatever device or platform you listen to us on. We will be back again next week. And if you've enjoyed listening to us, which we hope you have, we'd be very grateful if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you find that you can download our podcast. Any comments you'd like to leave, we'd be happy to hear them. Any suggestions, anything you'd like us to talk about, anyone you'd like us to talk to, do get in touch. Or you can contact us directly, podcast@theconstructionindex.co.uk.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from The Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news every day, visit theconstructionindex.co.uk. You can find the latest issue of The Construction Index magazine in WH Smith, an independent newsagents UK-wide. Use our store locator to find your nearest stockist today at theconstructionindex.co.uk/magazine.